welcome to the Gregor Podcast. Are you looking for a better pre-owned buying experience? Lakewood Chev has certified pre-owned vehicles that are fully inspected, warrantied by General Motors, and have a 30-day exchange privilege. Check it out, Lakewood Chev.
Toronto Blue Jays is very early in training. I do want to get to the Aaron Sanchez contract, though. A lot of people were surprised. You know, he signs a one-year deal at just over $500,000, which is huge money for the majority of us. But in Major League Baseball circles, that's like the ultimate chump change. What do you make of this negotiation, Keegan?
This is the hot new drama, I guess, in Toronto, and an unexpected one. Typically, these contract renewals go by without much notice at all. Most of the time, they're not even reported. They're just common business. But for Sanchez, and especially Scott Boras here, now that he's in the picture, this is, it's getting a little more attention than I think it really is due. And, you know, that's good news. I don't think it's as serious as a lot of people think. But what Scott Boras is upset with isn't necessarily the Blue Jays. It's really the current CBA, the collective bargaining agreement that allows for this, for players to be renewed at the minimum, because Sanchez this year making, I think it's $535,000, that's the exact same as a no-name reliever that will slide into the back end of a bullpen for the first season will make. And is it fair? I don't know, but that's what the CBA allows, and some teams do it differently. They'll add a little extra change onto that. Noah Syndergaard got $600,000 this year, for example, from the New York Mets, and that's a comparable. But this is how the Blue Jays do it, for better or for worse. And it's right now, I think a lot of this, guys, is, you know, Scott Boras and Sanchez, it's not about the here and now. It's about 3 or 4 years from now, when Sanchez could potentially be due for a big contract, kind of like a Steven Strasburg type of deal. If that's the case, well, here we have Scott Boras kind of laying the groundwork already and kind of, you know, getting on the radio, getting on TV and getting his name out there, getting it out there that he's a little displeased, because contract negotiations are a long game. And Scott Boras is the king of that. You know, his job is not to be well-liked. It's to get the most for his player. And that's what you're seeing already. It's a long game.
Yeah, no, definitely haven't. But you know what? I kind of applaud the teams that do it. There's very few times in the CBA where it works to your advantage. So when you have it there, everybody who's in business knows it's not personal. So the agent can say all he wants and get on his high horse or whatever, but the reality is it's business, it's not personal, and if it's there and until it changes, I don't really see a problem with teams doing it. Sure, I guess they could bump it up to 600,000 if they like, but I'm sure Sanchez is going to be like, well, whatever, 600 or 550. It's still ultimately for me what I think I'm worth. It's not going to be close. Do you think the owners, this is something, because baseball has never been, outside of the expo year, but usually they can avoid lengthy CBA lockouts. Is this something that the players will dig their heels in the next time?
I think this is something that they might prefer to see change, perhaps seeing a little bit of a scale up naturally. So those second and third year guys before arbitration can have a little bit of a raise built in. But at the same time, this is part of a huge give and take. You know, if you give the players that, then owners take back something else. It's a real chess match and really fascinating if you're into, you know, that boring type of stuff, I guess. But this is something that some players do have a bit of an issue with. Now, at the same time, like you said off the top, they're making $500,000. No tears are going to be shed for that. But when you do compare it to the world they live in, the market of baseball, especially, I mean, the contracts you see in free agency, it's tough. And especially, guys, I'll make this argument, it's tougher for Sanchez than it will be for a Devin Travis or a Kevin Pillar, I think, because that's a pitcher throwing high velocity. And we have seen so many pitchers hit age 25, 26, 28, and either get injured or lose velocity, stuff like that. So he is giving his prime years to the Blue Jays at a very affordable price. So at the same time, from the Blue Jays side, that's great. You're getting an excellent value, better than you'll ever get from Aaron Sanchez for this dollar value. And, you know, for the Blue Jays, since they can do it, it's completely legal, fully within their rights. You know, why not? But from the player's side, it does kind of sting a little bit.
Keegan, you mentioned Devin Travis. Brings up my first question. Is he he's the favorite? Is he the only guy that's going to get a look at the leadoff spot? I'm wondering about his health. And if it's not him, who else steps in that spot?
good question, because let's assume for a moment that Devon Travis isn't ready. I think if he's ready, he's the leadoff guy. There's not much of a conversation. But if he's not ready, it becomes a question of philosophy, I think. Now, if you want to go by the numbers for the guy that's going to get on base and lead the lineup, I think you look at Jose Bautista, especially since you probably only need that for 2 or 3 weeks, hopefully, if that's the situation. He'll get on base at a 375 clip or so. Not the fastest guy in the world, but you don't need to be. I think the days of a leadoff guy needing to be short and fast, that's over. So as long as Bautista gets on base, he's good there. But at the same time, Kevin Pillar has had a good spring training.
Yeah.
He is getting on base. He's taking walks. Now, all of the other data from his career suggests that that's a bit of an outlier. And keep in mind that in spring training, you're not exactly seeing the best pitchers in their best form. But John Gibbons is a guy who has been known to ride a hot hand. He's been known to have his quote-unquote guys. So does Kevin Pillar become his guy again for a couple of weeks? It's more possible than perhaps it should be. And you know what? If it's only for a couple of weeks, that could work out just fine. You know, Pillar could, he could make some noise at the top of a lineup if things are going well. But as long as Travis is healthy, I think he slides in there really naturally. And the best thing about having Travis at number one, guys, is that you can move Kevin Pillar down to number eight or number nine. At that point in the lineup, he can get on base and try to steal, try to work a hit and run, a bunt, or just kind of make a mess of things at the bottom of a lineup and really maximize the tools he does have. Even though he's not a natural leadoff guy, he's still valuable offensively. He can really push the envelope and the bases, and that brings the most balanced lineup to the whole picture.
Keegan, last one for me. The other question I have, are they going to have two lefties coming out of the bullpen, two guys that make sense?
I definitely think they'll break camp with two lefties. Now, obviously, you'll have J.P. Howell. He's in there locked in, no matter what. And people aren't comfortable with it, but Aaron Loop, I think it's still his to lose, really, with Aaron Loop in there. And he is on that arbitration contract. If you start him in the majors and he looks poor for a month, well, he had his chance. But behind him, you have a few other options. You have a Tim Mayza, who's come into camp, really opened some eyes, but he hasn't pitched much above single-A ball. So you want to see him get in there, double-A, triple-A, and handle some veterans in at that level. Chad Girardeau is another one, Matt Dermody. They do have some options there. I think you'll probably see three or four of those guys pitch at the major league level this year if they find someone. And even furthermore, guys, I remember last year, right near opening day, they grabbed Franklin Morales on a one-year, $2 million deal. It turned out to be a bad deal. He was hurt. He barely pitched. But that type of thing could happen again, where on roster cutdown day, there's going to be a team out there with a greater wealth of lefties than the Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. Maybe someone becomes available, and that slides in. So I think you'll see J.P. Howell and then a group effort as the second lefty. But that second lefty will definitely be there, I think.
Keegan, really appreciate the rundown. It's an interesting time for the Jays. We look forward to it and look forward to the start of the regular season.
Happy to. We'll talk again soon, guys.